Arche! And welcome, everyone, to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. I am Drew Scanlon. Joining me are my co-hosts, Danny O'Dwyer and Rob Zachney. How are you guys? Danny, what's up?
I'm doing great. Konasa Tautu, Makara. Tautu, Inagoni and Balia Ohaklia. You're in Dublin at the moment, I hear.
Yes, I am. So if there are any weird like time lags or it doesn't seem like we can hear each other, it's because we're trying to Skype across the Atlantic Ocean.
It's part of a culture. It's a cultural exchange program. I've spent enough time in America that Drew is now going to spend 5 years in Ireland.
Yeah, well, compare notes. That's a different podcast. Yeah, it's nice. I'm sitting here in an Airbnb with shoddy Wi-Fi. So
cool. Yeah, cool. Welcome to my. Yeah, that's my welcome to my college life.
So we ended up when we did E3. So this is just a really quick tangent. When we did E3 with Waypoint, we ended up in an Airbnb that like we'd been told and we'd asked specifically about their Wi-Fi performance, like what was their wired and Wi-Fi connection like. And everything we were told was a pack of lies. Basically, we got like a DSL connection run our entire like E3 thing off of. And it was so bad, like we could barely watch any of the conferences. And we realized that it was more effective for us, like particularly for like streaming, to just use our social editors, Danica Herod's, wireless data off her phone. And so our E3 plans kind of like went flying out the window as we all gathered around this tiny like overheated Airbnb with like internet that just kept going down and periscoped off of someone's iPhone. It was the rawest thing I have ever been like part of production wise.
That is awesome.
It was awesome.
E3 right there. Yeah.
Yeah, it was super like a fun gorilla shoot, but also I would not volunteer to do that again.
No. At Giant Bomb we had a lot of similar situations, and then when we got to CBS we were like, "All right, let's get some business class internet in this building." And oh my god, I'm in the wrong business. I need to be supplying internet to companies because holy cow, do they charge you a lot of money just to get like a fiber line in there.
Dude, I remember like the buy-in cost. You could, you know, talk to Dan Mahorik, who's now at Twitch.
Oh yeah.
About how much it costs to just hook up to the like wired internet on the E3 show floor per day. Like it's fucking outrageous.
Yeah, it's a corkage fee.
Yeah, you'd swear it was like fucking the nectar of the gods coming through those pipes. You know, it's... unbelievable. Ridiculous.
It's like running an F1 team.
Exactly.
Pretty much. Good segue, Rob. Speaking of Nectar of the Gods, we got probably the best race, which is of the season in the U.S. Grand Prix, which is why we decided to do the U.S. GP and the Mexico GP in one episode, because Danny and I were both traveling, and it just wouldn't work to, like, you know, do kind of a half step. We wanted to talk about both of these races in their entirety. So we're going to do the US GP and Mexico GP this episode. And then next week, we will do a pre-Brazil episode for that Grand Prix. So what do you guys say we just hop right into the grid for the US GP?
Sure. I want to just first of all mention that I was in Austin for almost the entire race weekend and didn't get to see any of it live because I was working. But it was real fun wandering around the city and seeing a lot of Mercedes and Ferrari jackets and the odd McLaren one as well. And then there was a couple of Haas stuff as well. It was funny, like the whole city just had these like little like shopping stands around the place where they were just selling like F1 merch, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then like all the like little, you know, brunch places had like your F1 pit stop here and stuff like that. It was cool. And we ended up staying pretty close to where you and I stayed, actually, when we went to the GP 2 or 3 years ago. But sadly, I didn't have time to do a meetup or do any of that stuff. I was too busy filming our weird Half-Life project. But it was cool. It was cool to be there. I watched the race on Sunday night.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah, the a couple, I guess, things to mention here in the that affected the grid. Sebastian Vettel got a 3-place grid penalty for failing to slow for red flags in first practice on the weekend. So he actually qualified in second, but is starting fifth. And then in Q1, Verstappen broke his car by running over some of those really thick yellow curbs that they had placed on the outside of one of the turns to prevent people from going over there. I heard Brundle call him, and I think I've heard you call them this, Danny, sleeping policeman.
Yeah, that's the term of you hear quite a lot in the UK, when like old precursor speed bumps.
That is dark.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of is, actually.
But yeah, he went over some of those and broke his dang car. So he did not even set a time in Q1. But because Gasly and Hartley both replaced a lot of their power unit parts, they start from the back of the grid, so Max is 18th. Lewis Hamilton, though, on pole position, followed by one Kimi Raikkonen in second place, inheriting it from Sebastian Vettel after he got his grid penalty. Behind Kimi in third is Bottas. Then we got Danny Ric, followed by Vettel. Behind them is Ocon, Hülkenberg, Grosjean, Leclerc, and Perez rounding out the top 10. And then we've got Sainz, Magnussen, Alonso, Sorotkin, Stroll in 15th. Then we've got Ericsson, Van Dorn, Verstappen, Gasly, and Hartley. Danny O'Dwyer, do you want to take us through this start?
Sure. The one thing I remember about the start of the race was that when we woke up on Sunday morning, it was dry in Austin for the first time in 5 days. And then also right. After the race was finished, it rained on Monday for the rest of the next week. So we were crazy lucky not to get a wet race, or unlucky not to get a wet race after all the craziness of qualifying and practice and everything. So it was a super nice day on Sunday, good track temps. Everyone sort of, there was nothing to, the inside line is always a little bit better for folks on the sort of less like dirty part of it there where Kimi was. But that didn't really account for the bad start that Hamilton got when the lights went out. He had a bit of wheel spin as he was getting, I think, between like second and third gear or something, just as he was shifting up, which let Kimi get the jump on him a bit, which obviously with the inside line leading up to that crazy, tight turn one at the top of the hill, meant that he had track position going into turn two. Apart from that, the rest of them were kind of similar in terms of where they ended up. There was a bit of action as they were going through the S's. Lance Stroll, I want to say, hit into Fernando Alonso, or sort of like pushed him out. Fernando, not very happy, said it's impossible to race with these folks or something like that. There was a couple of people jumping over the S's as well, which somebody maybe got penalized for getting an advantage at that stage, maybe later in the race. I forget. That's coming back to me now. And then there was a wonderful, I guess that's what happened in the first two sections. They all kind of came out, Kimi onto that main back straight then was ahead of Hamilton and everyone else sort of lined up behind them. I won't take up the full lap because the much more interesting thing happened at the start of the third sector.
Yeah, I guess in that melee, Grosjean also hit Leclerc and spun him around and earned himself not only a 3-place grid penalty for the next race, but 2 penalty points on his license, which puts him 2 points away from a race ban. So if he had gone, this didn't end up happening, but if he had gone into the race in Mexico and earned more points in the weekend, like if he had gotten some penalty during practice or qualifying, he could not have raced in the Mexican Grand Prix. So I guess good for Grosjean that he didn't screw up there. But Vettel tried the long way around Bottas but went wide and was not able to get by him. So he's still in fifth, and he has the advantage on the straights, though, on Ricciardo, because Ricciardo's in a Red Bull, not typically good on straights. And gets him without too much trouble, but there's so much road left that Ricciardo stays in his slipstream and then outbreaks Vettel to pull even with him as they head into the turns. So Vettel, is still gunning for the championship at this point. I guess we should mention Vettel needs to come in fourth or better. Is that what has to happen?
Yeah, I mean, this is like, Rob has been saying this, I think, since he joined us. Like, the championship is still open, but is it really?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of what I don't know. Having that color this entire race just made it that much better. I mean, it's a great race in itself, but, you know, seeing what Vettel has to do kind of throughout this race was really, really cool.
Vettel, by God, was going to get that camel through the needle's eye. Just, it doesn't matter if Ricardo's there or not.
Yeah, so he obviously does not want to give up any places, so he's really hanging on, and as he's making this sweeping right turn, he just understeers a little and drifts into Ricardo, who's on the outside. And Ricardo bounces away and tries off the track, but because it's Sebastian Vettel, he snaps around 180 degrees and watches everyone else drive by. And again, lights up his tires to try to get back in, rejoining in 15th place. So from there, it's like, well, did the championship just, is that it, right? I think I certainly thought that for a little while, like, oh, okay, great. There it is. Lewis just won the championship. But as we'll see, he's in a pretty good car and makes up a lot of places.
It's one of those spots where you're kind of like, you know, it's one of those spots where you're thinking like if it, maybe it's over this race, maybe it's not. Like that's kind of what the question ended up being, was like, does Lewis end up getting the championship in America, or does this go somewhere else? And the only thing like you're thinking at that stage is like reliability. Maybe Hamilton's car will break down, but they've been so reliable this year that you're thinking like, no, like there's a much better chance of a Red Bull breaking down, or there's a much better chance of a Ferrari having a problem or something like that. So, and especially with like Lewis being so level-headed this year, like he's just not making mistakes, and he's not, you know, he's getting the points he needs. He's kind of being a bit of an Alain Prost this year, which he never really was before, where he's just getting the points when where he has them. You know, he's trying to win races, but he's not being crazy, and he doesn't need to at this stage either. And on the flip side of it, Vettel basically like threw his race away on the first lap, and also in qualifying, just like not slowing down enough under a flag. Like that's like really basic shit. Like he's a multiple world time champion. No one else did that, and you just get the impression that Sebastian can't wait for the season to be over, and he's just like, he needs to like, you know, take a timeout or something.
I am really curious what the championship looks like next year, what Seb looks like as a driver, because I think you're right. Like Lewis has become more and more of a complete driver. Like whatever he needs to do on the day, he will find a way to do it. Which means when he needs to be a very like Prost-like icy pragmatist, just, you know, driving perfect laps, you know, minimize risks, he will absolutely do that. But on those races where he needs to, you know, pull a miracle, he often finds a way to do that as well. He is sort of become a much more like measured driver than I've ever seen him. And Seb, you know, he has moments where he's such a great racer, but this is the, like, when you look at this year as an arc, there have been so many mistakes, but also like here by the end of the season, there's got to be some self-doubt creeping in. And I am really curious what the long-term effects of that are, right? Like I am hoping this season, like Seb puts it behind him. And like we have an awesome Ferrari Mercedes battle next year, maybe even, you know, 3-4 ways for the drivers' title. Wouldn't that be awesome? Mm-hmm. But I am a little bit concerned that the sheer number of things that have happened to Seb this season are going to leave him like completely in his head for 2019. How many times has he dumped his car off the track? When he absolutely needed to do anything but that. And here's my other question. Just when you watch this specific incident, do you feel like this was just pure understeer, or is he doing that thing where you're trying to cut a wide line and shut the door on somebody?
To me, it seemed like that, because the amount of, like, that arena section, that's where we had seats when we went. There's so many opportunities. I mean, when you're coming off turn 12, like Ricardo takes that line because of turn 13 which is where him and Seb had their little touch, but because of 14 and 15, because eventually you end up, you can like it turn 15 kind of like slopes up a little bit, and it's such a tight left-hander that if you're anywhere near people, you cut them off right away. So to me it really looked like he was trying to push him off the track, and by the time they touched, I feel like Ricardo had a couple of wheels on the outside of the track already.
Yeah, It was not it was not close. But it's, yeah, I don't know. It's like a mirror image of what we saw in, with him on Max in, where was that? Austria?
Japan.
Japan, yeah.
Right.
Where he's going in a spoon?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, was trying to force, that was trying to force a line, though. It wasn't as wild a move as it initially seems. We saw drivers eventually. Like, apparently now there's a line at Spoon with these cars that exists that did not exist before, which is really cool. But this was the, yeah, this did sort of seem like the reverse of that coin, where he's the driver who's sort of roughly has the position and then just decides to move into the aggressive line when he's side by side. It's such a strange move. It was sort of a, I think he had position to still be in decent position to fight Ricardo coming out of that turn. It was just this, like, wanting to slam the door on somebody's challenge. And sometimes that works, but you need to have unequivocal position that they have to break out.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for further up the field, his teammate is having a much better race, making up a place on the opening lap for the first time since Abu Dhabi 2016. Yeah, and as we mentioned, Vettel does manage to turn it on from 15th place, and by lap 7, he passes Ocon for 8th place. It's kind of the same thing that's happening with Verstappen. He started from 18th. And is up at the same lap to 5th place with a pass on Hülkenberg. So Vettel still got a lot of work to do to get to 4th place, which is what he needs to do, because Hamilton is at that point in 2nd behind Raikkonen. Although Vettel does get some help a few laps later, much to the chagrin of Ricardo fans everywhere, because, surprise, Ricardo goes out with a mechanical failure.
Yeah, killer.
Which, you know, just, yeah, you have to, like, just roll your eyes at this point. But it's in a weird spot, so we do get a virtual safety car, which kind of leads to this fun situation where Hamilton is told to box opposite Raikkonen if they're still in the virtual safety car, and Kimi actually, like, jukes toward the pit to, like, fake Hamilton out. But Hamilton is not fooled, and he does end up pitting. He then works his way back up to Raikkonen by lap 21. Raikkonen is still on his original tires, so Lewis has caught him and tries to pass. I emphasize try because Raikkonen does put up some of the best defense I think I have seen all year, kind of reminding everyone why he's there, in my opinion. I just think...
And
go ahead.
Sorry, and the narrative of this sort of part of the race as well was is kind of a little bit like, why did Ferrari not pick Kimi? Because Lewis has already caught up with him. But, like, the window for those tires of, like, just, you know, getting those really important hot laps in was closing. And what we kind of saw by the time Raikkonen did pit at the end of lap 21 was that he had kind of, between the back markers and then him getting up to get, or the overtaking and then getting up to Kimi, that he had taken the life out of those tires in a way that either Ferrari were planning to, or they, you know, they were placating Kimi over radio saying that Hamilton was going for a two-stop and they were on different strategies. But what looked like Ferrari maybe not jumping the gun or missing out on their opportunity, those crucial laps ended up really playing into Ferrari's hands when Hamilton was, you know, had clean air in front of himself but suddenly didn't have the tires anymore.
Yeah, and you know, it did a lot to slow Hamilton down.
Hang on.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wanted to ask you all, did you notice the hero who found a TV mic during the race and started making aggressively loud race car noises into the microphone for like 3 laps before? And I'm not sure they ever found the guy. I bet you from the truck, they just killed that mic.
Yeah, they must have had to, like, see where it was.
Well,
I didn't
notice
when I was watching.
It took him a while to find the mic.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Because he was just going, like, nyom, right?
Nyom. Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. And, like, it was distracting and loud, and the announcers were getting it, too, because Crofty sort of, like, started to stumble a bit, and he was like, that sounds, that's some good race car noises. It sounds a bit like the old turbos, but okay. Oh, man. Well done, Austin.
I had a lot of people with me being in Austin at the time, and that being the sort of like end of this podcast every week, I did have a lot of people on Twitter asking me if I had found a microphone at the racetrack or something. Sadly,
yeah, we got a lot of messages on Twitter from Deucinage, SR Terpy, Tohir T, everyone asking, is Danny in the crowd yelling into a microphone?
I like the idea that there's like, that's what I do when I go to F1 races. I just do the nyom thing the whole way around, like a giddy, you know, 4 or 5 year old.
I mean, that's kind of what it sounded like. I'm not even sure it was intentional. Maybe it was by this guy, but you know, they have like crowd noise mics, right? And maybe this guy was just...
Well, my partner's theory is one of the corner workers.
Oh.
She thinks it was a bored track marshal, sort of draped over a guardrail. And, you know, like most of the time, you just got to watch the race and you don't have much to do. And, like, that was her suspicion because, like, they don't mic up the crowds that aggressively at F1 races. You mic to pull audio from the track. So probably the only way you get that is if there's a corner worker doing that, which I think is probably a good insight.
It's like when you find yourself talking to yourself or like singing in the shower, like you don't realize you're doing it. Like you're just they're just sitting there just going meow.
I'm so glad that came over the radio.
Beautiful.
And like into the having it like mess with Crofty, I think was the best part. Elsewhere in pit strategies, Verstappen pitted on lap 22, coming out behind Vettel, and actually catches him by lap 26. So similar pit stops strategies for Vettel as well. I was pretty nervous at this point because you know Vettel and Verstappen have had some things in the past, but Verstappen does make a clean pass on the outside with his new tires. And then Vettel comes into the pits, coming out in fifth place behind Bottas. So if Hamilton stays second, Vettel does need to get by Bottas to extend the championship.
Yeah, I think it was a five-point gap. Was that what it was then? Maybe that was...
That's from fourth to fifth. That sounds right. Okay. I think Ferrari was right. Hamilton does make a second pit stop on lap 38, coming out behind Verstappen in third. So it's still possible for Vettel at this point if nothing happens to Raikkonen or Verstappen, who are, it should be noted, very close to each other. So by lap 54, 2 seconds covered the top three, Raikkonen, Verstappen, and Hamilton, which is awesome because then Hamilton has a go on Verstappen for second, who holds off the first lunge, but Hamilton keeps at it, doing crisscrosses and everything. And eventually Hamilton goes wide on a turn and then concedes the place to Verstappen, which I don't know about you guys. I loved seeing this action from Hamilton. Like it was hard racing, even though he could just cruise to the championship.
Yeah. And we know that he...
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, and we know that he's really leery of Max. Like he is...
He should be.
Yeah, he's very concerned about the way like Max does not sort of hesitate to, as they say in IndyCar, give someone the chrome horn. and so like he knew he was going in a super dicey situation and going to have to get wheel to wheel on bad rubber with Max. And I think they both just raced absolutely beautifully, gave each other space. Now, Austin makes it easy to give you space. Like that was also a... This is why Austin is a cool track, because there are like sequences on the circuit where you can have drivers like perform these like almost dogfight like scissors maneuvers to try to get track position. So it was a great duel, and the fact that like Hamilton managed to make it almost stick when he'd been complaining about his tires for ages, and it seems like Mercedes, everyone was caught out by the change in track temperatures between race day and what they'd practiced in. Mm-hmm. But Mercedes definitely seemed to struggle the most mightily with it. Although maybe Lewis is just the most vocal on the radio about when he feels things are not quite working right.
Yeah, like totally. To Rob's point, like that entire arena section, I mean, kind of like all the way from like turn 12 at the end of the back straight, all the way to I think it's 18, which is the super wide part where he eventually lost out to Max. It's just it's a really great like little like place for those type of exchanges. And like the thing you sort of like forget about this track is that like so many tracks were used to the start finish straight or the main straight having a lot of the overtaking stuff happening, and that doesn't happen here. Like you don't tend to get a lot of overtakes just by the nature of that hill and the tight hairpin at the top of turn one. So like it's really cool that there are other places for that type of overtaking to happen, and that it's not just a one and done affair. That like we know at the end of that back straight when the DRS zone is there and it's an easy overtake, that it's not over. It's that braking zone is going to tell the story for the next five or six corners. So it's such a fun circuit that way. Like it's a great circuit to watch, and it seems like a fun one to drive as well. And then the other thing about what was going on with Hamilton and Verstappen then is that at that stage Vettel was still fighting to try and get past Valtteri, and Hamilton was basically battling to try and get the championship. And we're also talking about, you know, to Rob's point, like he has that sort of pragmatic streak in him he didn't have before, but he's also somebody who's won and lost championships on the final laps of races. So like he has the mentality to try and get it if he can. And what I liked about it is that I never got the feeling that Hamilton pulled out of that battle. It just looked like Max got the upper hand.
Yeah, exactly. And Vettel's not done either, so he lap 55 I think is one lap away from the finish, and he goes for Bottas on the back straight.
What? Did you say one lap away from the finish?
Yes.
Oh my god!
And less than a second. Bottas looks like he's going to defend the position on the inside, but he same as Hamilton, kind of he overcooks it and goes off track, promoting Vettel to fourth place, and that, gentlemen, is the way it ends, with Vettel in fourth, Hamilton in third, sending the championship into Mexico. Verstappen gets second, and Kimi Raikkonen wins a Grand Prix for the first time in like 114 races.
Wow. Wah, 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 wah.
Oh my god, it felt so good.
And he almost cracked a smile.
I think we saw a little bit. We saw some emotion.
Yeah, well, also, but like he's so, we did see emotion, but what I love is the emotion we saw was almost this like harried, like, well, that was about goddamn time yes. reaction, like more than anything, like Kimi is always going to be Kimi in every situation. And so like, he's not like, no waterworks, no tears. And I think the reporters are trying to be like, hey, so like show more emotion, which I think is, I hate it when reporters ask that question of interview subjects, because like people process things differently. It feels like a really selfish question to ask, especially of an athlete like coming down from whatever insane cocktail of endorphins, adrenaline they're feeling. But I think what I loved is that like, no, there's no waterworks from Kimi. There's no valedictory speech about what this means. There's only the slightly pissed off, like working Joe of an F1 driver, who's like, well, it took me long enough.
He actually, I think that comes across in like the post-race interview with Coulthard. Coulthard asks him like, what do you think about, how do you feel about winning the race? And he says, bigger deal for a lot of people. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it really doesn't change my life one bit. I'm happy we are here and that we win, but I think the biggest difference is the way people look at you. If you look at people in a different way, if they win or not, it doesn't make a lot of difference in my mind. But obviously, I'm happy. Just proving some people wrong is enough fun for me.
It must feel good, considering the circumstances of his of his seat and whatnot, like to be able to get that win. But I'm sure it's bittersweet as well, right? Like it's probably a little bit embarrassing in a weird way to get your first win after all that time as well. Did you guys see, I'm not sure if this happened between the two races, did you guys see the WTF1 YouTube channel had a challenge with Kimi Raikkonen with one of the presenters from that website / podcast?
No.
Did you guys see that? So like it's one of the, I think it was like maybe a sponsored piece of content with Shell or something, which I think might have some sort of thing with Ferrari or Kimi or something. But it's one of those times where, like, when he's not actually in, like, the F1 presentation, like, the race and all that sort of stuff, he's, like, actually, like, a kind of a normal, laughable, affable guy. And it's, like, it was the first time I'd seen that side of him in a while, because he tends to just kind of be so stoic. I'll send you a link to it. We should stick it in the show notes. It's definitely worth watching, because he's just having, cracking jokes with this dude in a very, like, normal, non-robotic Kimmy type of way. And it's nice to, you know, see a breakthrough the sort of like stoic nature of him during the race.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see that. I think I did see that floating around, but I didn't watch it. So we'll put it in the show notes.
I just wanted to ask y'all real quick. Like, sure. So I mean, I'm curious, where are you at with Kimi right now? Because I feel like early in the season, it really did feel like, I don't know, like, you know, this could be it. Like, you know, this is a driver who's clearly on the downslope and rapidly descending it. From my perspective, I feel like not just with that one victory, but like, yes, he has his opening lap performances, but he's been really sharp and consistent for Ferrari of late, it feels like. And I do just kind of wonder. I don't know. Do you like? What's your read on Kimi? Do you think he's as close to retirement as maybe it appeared when this whole season started?
I feel like I don't have enough data on him. Like, it almost seems like what's happened with his seat kind of, you know, he's in his like Alonso phase where he just doesn't care, but he also just so happens to be in a really good car still. Like, I don't know, because like the starts was always the problem,
yeah.
Or not always the problem, but like the starts were like a big part of the problem. And if you know his qualifying times were generally like fairly decent, but you know, but always behind Sebastian, but then he'd always like miss out at the start of a race, and it was never his temperament or his consistency during the races. Like, there was times where he lost positions because of bad strategy on Ferrari's part, which has been something that's been a problem for the past couple of seasons. Every once in a while there's unforced errors, but like his racecraft was always really good. It just seemed like he never put his car in the right position during the weekend or on the first lap of a race. So it seems like, oh, he kind of solved that problem. So like, I don't know, like, maybe that could be so many things. It could be him, the lack of pressure. It could be him getting used to the car. It could be the fact that Lewis is, you know, taking his foot off the gas a little bit because he's got, you know, space between himself and Vettel, and the Red Bulls aren't as competitive as they have been in previous seasons either, you know. So yeah, I don't really know. It's the type of thing where I even feel, Rob, by the end of the season I won't really know, like, even if he does well in the next two races, because the pressure is kind of off. We are coasting into 2019 a bit.
Yeah, and for me, I haven't been watching the sport as long as you guys have. But the impression that I get from Kimi on this year and going into 2019 is that the man just wants to drive a car. And if he can do that, I think he'll just race until he is, 80 years old. And it almost doesn't seem to matter to him what car he's in. He just wants to do his job well. And I think, doing that job next to Sebastian Vettel can, invite a lot of comparisons. But I think the guy is super solid, at least from what I have seen. And I'm excited that he is going to be, in a reasonably competitive car next year. I'm also very excited to see Leclerc in a Ferrari. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
I don't feel bad for Kimi. I think it's awesome that he finally got a win in this year, and I think he's kind of going out on a high note, and he's not really going out. So I'm pleased for him, and I'm looking forward to next year.
Like, you can see that he's gotten consistently better year after year after year. I just went back to have a look at his record over the past, four or five seasons at Ferrari. And like, you know, he went from getting basically no podiums in his first season, his first one, to getting a couple of third places in 2015, to getting two third places and two second places the next year, usually the same, like, four retirements a season. Last year he did all right. He got five third place podiums and two silvers, as it were. And then this year he's completely smashed that. He's been on the podium 13, well, now that we spoilers times, which included a race win and three second place. So he has consistently gotten better every single year, in an era where Ferrari were probably fairly consistently second place. You know, they weren't battling for first a lot, obviously, but they were still, like, within that range of second and third, or maybe third, I guess, with Valtteri and Nico. So, like, he has gotten better each year. It's almost a shame that he's not got maybe one more year left in the Scuderia at this stage. See what he's, if he can keep it up.
I guess here's the thing behind my question. This is the very, like, Colin Cowherd or Skip and Shannon type question for y'all. would you, like, next year, if you're Ferrari, like, would you rather have second half of the season Seb in your Ferrari, or would you rather have Kimi?
Yeah, I'd go for Kimi. The mentality thing is for Seb, it's really weird because he never had that problem before. Like, he was a Schumacher. I guess Schumacher actually had his, you know, threw away plenty of races being overly aggressive for doing something stupid. But yeah, I don't know. It's I think the end of the season can't come soon enough for Vettel, and it's almost coming too soon for Kimi.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's run down the rest of the field here, shall we? Kimi Räikkönen on top, winning the United States Grand Prix. Behind him, Max Verstappen in second place, and Lewis Hamilton rounding out the podium. Behind him, Sebastian Vettel keeping the championship alive, followed by Valtteri Bottas, Nico Hülkenberg, Carlos Sainz Jr. And then we had Esteban Ocon and Kevin Magnussen in eighth and ninth, but they were disqualified for fuel errors.
I did not know that.
This race. Yep. DSQ'd.
Okay, what fuel error?
Did they use diesel instead of
let's see. We have
They did a fuel pit stop. We didn't notice, but they actually refueled the car halfway through.
Yes. Speaking of which, weekend.
Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead. I'm gonna find some quotes.
I was gonna pad for you. I was in Austin and I was in Dallas and Phoenix and LA for the past 2 weeks. So I had multiple rental cars. And there's a thing which we have a lot of European listeners and we have a lot of North American listeners. There's a thing in whenever I'm in Europe, whenever I get a rental, it's all, like, so often it's a diesel car, and I don't know why, because, like, there aren't. Like, diesels aren't, like, that uncommon in Europe, but, like, for whatever reason, rentals are always fucking diesels. When I've got in Ireland, it's always a diesel. When I get one in England, it's mostly a diesel. So that's led me to be, like, terrified every single time I rent a car in the States, because, like, they're never diesels. Like, you never get a diesel car as a rental, or at least I haven't. But I'm always, every single time I go up to the fuel pump, I'm always, like, shitting myself, or, like, looking up the, like, engine of the car and, like, being, fuck, this is going to be the time I brick this car by the end of the road. So that's been my past 2 weeks, is renting multiple cars and being terrified on the side of, like, a Dallas highway that I'm gonna fucking ruin this, like, whatever it was I rented. I also rented a Ford Mustang convertible when I was in Sedona, because it cost like $40 more than the sedan I originally had.
You gotta do it.
Yeah, I've never driven one before. It was a lot of fun.
in Texas, no less. So Magnussen's disqualification is more straightforward of the two. This, by the way, from racefans.net. He did not exceed the limit on fuel flow, rather the restriction on how much fuel drivers can use during a race. This is set at 105 kilograms. So he used too much fuel. In fact, there were a lot of radio messages apparently to Magnussen saying, we are really low on fuel. Lift off, no throttle, checkered flag, like trying not to use 105 kilograms of fuel. Ocon, however, let's see, Force India team principal Otmar Safenauer admitted there had been a spike in Ocon's fuel flow rate during the first lap, but that over the whole lap he was compliant with the 100 kilograms per hour limit. So that was a fuel rate, and Magnuson was a fuel total. So there you go. Them's weird. The rules.
Yeah, weird that they were like altogether different issues, but that they both did it.
Yeah, I wonder if they were just checking on this race.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. That it's funny. I know as well that a lot of in the past drivers have just pulled over after they've hit the checkered flag. I know the FIA weren't super happy about that sort of stuff, but they used to like just pull over so that the fuel didn't get burnt on the way back to Parc Fermé or whatever. Right. The garage. Yeah, I don't know if they're allowed to do that anymore.
Inheriting 8th and 9th are Sergio Perez and Brendan Hartley, and Marcus Ericsson is the last to get a point. Behind them, Van Dorn, Gasly, Sorotkin, and Stroll. Out of this race were Leclerc with an accident, Ricciardo with his power unit, Grosjean and Alonso with accidents, and then Ocon and Magnussen were disqualified. USGP, one of the best races of the season for sure.
Pretty good. Congratulations to Brandon Hartley for getting some points again.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then we move south of the border to Mexico City, where the Red Bulls were looking very good all weekend in practice and qualifying. And it looked like Verstappen was going to get the pole position, which would have made him the youngest pole sitter ever. But old Ricciardo pipped him at the very last second by 0.026.
Oof! Those Red Bulls—they love that. They love that circuit. The sort of the altitude plays into their favor a decent amount. They got the Red Bulls got a lot of mechanical grip, which counts a lot more. And of course, last year Verstappen won the race, I believe, in 2017.
Yes,
so,
I think you're right.
They've always had a decent showing at the Mexican Grand Prix, and yeah, right away, you know, from practice through the qualifying and then into the race, they were super super fast.
Yeah, and Ricciardo's lap was pretty amazing because the rest of the field had set their fastest times on their first Q3 run, but then couldn't improve on their second runs. Ricciardo improved by more than 2/10 on his second run to get that pole position. Verstappen, of course, pretty bummed. And so when he drove into the, like, you know, 1, 2, 3 signs that are set up there for the post qualifying interview, he just smashed into the second place sign. And Ricciardo was very excited and uttered, I think, one of my favorite quotes of the season. He says to David Coulthard, I got to relax a little. I'm tripping major nutsack right now.
I'm sure nutsack isn't particularly outlined as one of the FIA's, like, do not say on camera words.
They included it in their best quotes of the weekend.
Oh, you're kidding,
on their YouTube
really?
Channel, yeah.
Great. Well, I guess it's part of the media package now. Jesus. Amazing.
Yes. I had to think about it for a while. Like, oh, tripping balls. Nutsack. Cool. All right.
It's just balls is a little more vague. Nutsack is very graphic.
Yes. But it's yes, Daniel Ricciardo on pole. Behind him, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. Starting third. And in fourth, Vettel, followed by Bottas, Raikkonen, Hulkenberg, Sainz, Leclerc, and Magnussen in 10th. Then we've got Ocon, Alonso, Perez, Hartley, Van Dorn in 15th, Magnussen, Stroll, Grosjean, Sorokin, and Gasly. So Grosjean, again, got that three-place grid penalty for the Leclerc collision. And then Gasly also got hammered for more power unit changes. Honda using Toro Rosso as a guinea pig for next year's Red Bull. But yeah, so for this race, to keep the championship alive, Vettel has to win. And then Hamilton
and Zeus must hurl his lightning bolt from Olympus and smite Lewis Hamilton.
Hey, it could happen.
Yeah, what was the season? What was the season? We've talked about it before. Was it Jackie Stewart or someone? What was the season where the driver got injured and then they were trying? It was like, and that somebody had to like win the last couple of races.
Are you talking about the Lauda championship versus the one in Rush?
It might, yeah, the Nick, yeah, maybe the Hunt Lauda situation. That sounds about right. I feel like it happened different. That's probably what I'm thinking about. Yeah, where you like you need the driver to be, you know, hospitalized for you to win the rest of the championship. That's kind of what this looked like. It's like you needed something catastrophic to happen to Hamilton.
Right.
And then for Vettel to stop fucking hitting people and spinning.
Step one.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of happened with the Rosberg season, because Hamilton's engine exploded in Malaysia.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't this late in the season, but still, it was it seemed like something, Zeus's lightning bolt. Yes, no lightning, no weather for Mexico. Do you want to take us through the start, Danny?
Sure. Like you said, we've got our boy Ricardo in pole position, and Max lining up beside him, and then the sort of the eyes are on, like, which one of them is gonna, you know, are we going to have another Baku situation going down into a, you know, a tight left hand, or I guess it's the other side, the right hander. You know, will they come to blows? And then it didn't really matter, because Lewis Hamilton, you know, did the Mario Kart, hold down the button after the second light or whatever thing. Yeah. And fucking split the difference, almost like right, like it almost, when it happened, I almost shouted false start, because he just got such a drive off of it. Yeah. Obviously somebody was practicing since their bad start to the previous race, and then that sort of split everyone up a little bit, where you had Verstappen and Hamilton fighting into the first turn, and then suddenly Ricciardo was out of position because Verstappen had cut over him, and then he couldn't get past Hamilton. So you had Verstappen winning the Hamilton battle into turn one pretty handily, but then Valtteri Bottas and Danny Ric going side by side around turn one. Turn two, it looked like Bottas had the edge, but he sort of caught a little bit too much of the inside curb, lost a bit of grip, and then Ricciardo managed to cover him off pretty easily. And then Valtteri was basically fighting with, I guess it was Vettel then, in fifth to Was it, wait, where was, who was Kimi or Vettel higher in the qualifying?
It was Vettel. So I think they actually went three wide, Bottas, Ricciardo, Vettel, into that turn one, but then it was the two not Vettel that then came to blows after that. But yeah, Vettel does manage to claw his way back to Bottas, and they actually touch wheels going into turn six, and crazy. Bottas has to go off track. So
for once,
it was almost another one of those.
For once, he got the rub of the rub of the rubber, as it were, and didn't spin out. Yeah, crazy. Unfortunately, who didn't get any luck whatsoever was poor Fernando Alonso, who was using his amazing, you know, psychic powers, where he always seems to know when some, you know, backmarker is going to crash into another one, and always manages to avoid it. But some piece of, I think it was Ocon's front wing, just spat across the edge of the track and got wedged in some part of Fernando's front of his car, and you know, that debris just like caused havoc for him. So he ended up going wide as a defensive maneuver, and then almost completely inconsequentially, a piece of Ocon's car just flew out there and got wedged in him. Super unlucky. Yeah, he was retired four laps later. You know, just not going well for Fernando's last season. He's getting, and also I think also what that did was it stopped him from reaching the record of having the most F1 laps of any driver ever, because he would have had to have completed, I think, every lap since, or you know, maybe every lap shy 20 or something. But he can't add up the numbers.
You're not going to break that record if you're driving for McLaren these last few seasons. Like, I mean, that he was even in the running for that record is a testament to the sheer, like, what a prolific racing career he has had. Because I swear to God that the McLaren has run, like, on average half of every race for, like, the last three seasons.
The Mercedes' pit on lap 11, and then Verstappen on lap 13, who comes out behind Raikkonen and gets by him in short order on the start-finish straight with DRS. So kind of a similar thing. Mercedes just eating through their tires, and Ferrari is kind of playing a longer game. A few laps later, we get a repeat of the U.S. Grand Prix with Hamilton trying to pass Raikkonen, which he does without incident. Followed closely by Ricciardo. And I think I saw some people saying that Raikkonen didn't really put up a fight. But watching it again, I think this is just more ammunition for me that Raikkonen is a great driver, and probably, like, it feels like the last of a dying breed, because he makes it difficult for Hamilton. He like closes the door into turn one, but doesn't crunch into him. And then he drifts wide to block Hamilton, but Hamilton, having gotten a better exit, is already on the outside, and Raikkonen, you know, doesn't want to drive into him. So I know that, like, this is how it's supposed to be done, but it doesn't, it feels like this, you don't see this from the likes of Verstappen or Magnussen or Grosjean or Stroll or Ocon, right, even, who are a lot more careless. Like, the younger, maybe it's like, well, I mean, Grosjean and Magnussen have a lot more experience, and Verstappen should know better, but they're just a lot more careless. So Raikkonen, by doing that, is basically forcing Hamilton to drive perfectly, which he does because he's Hamilton and he gets by. But that, to me at least, is what I would like to see more of. Like, so the actual, all right, put your money where your mouth is. Let's actually race and not try to, like, you know, sneak one over on the other guy. Let's put our talents up against each other.
Yeah, and I feel like Kimi as well is the type of driver who races his entire race, whereas you get a lot of drivers like, you know, Verstappen is the obvious choice, where they're racing every lap. And, like, Kimi knows that, like, he could hold up Hamilton a lot there. But, like, he's racing his own race, and, like, ultimately, who's that going to play into? Like, maybe it helps Vettel in some way, but, like, ultimately, he's going to have to change the way he drives to cover off all of these corners, and that's going to slow him down, too, and ruin his race. So he, you know, it's like that. What was the line? There was a line in USA where they said something about Kimi holding up Hamilton, and he said, yeah, but, like, let's not do something silly as well. Like, he's willing to do it for the race strategy as long as it permits it, but that seemed like a situation where, like, you know, the typical pragmatic Finns, it's kind of like, no, like, you know, it's better for me to just, like, defend and not over defend, and then he can get back on to his race. I'm sure he didn't necessarily want to let Ricardo pass at the exact same turn or the next set of turns or that set of turns, but it seemed like the right thing to do, to defend cleverly without, you know, over egging the pudding, as it were.
I think there's, like, part of it is Raikkonen is just such an experienced driver at this point. He doesn't have that much to prove, so he's not going to be out there starving for credit or plaudits with every single move trying to get someone's attention. Like, he's driving for Ferrari. He's proven he's a world champion. He doesn't have to fight tooth and nail for everything. And I think that's a big part of it, just age, experience, position in the sport and in life. But it does remind me also of, you remember when that entire scandal came to light with Nelson Piquet Jr. About him staging a crash in Singapore on Silvio Berlusconi's orders, Flavio Briatore's orders to sort of rig a race a little bit. And I think it was Jackie Stewart said something interesting at the time, because he had sort of a measured condemnation of Piquet when a lot of people were, like, ready to run this guy out of motorsport forever for doing something like that. And again, I think it was Stewart. He said something like, well, of course, in my day, nobody would have done something like that. Nobody would have let someone order them to stage an accident and try to fix a race like that. But back in my day, it was like we were all men who were driving, like grown men. And PK, when he made that decision, was like 20, 21. Like, maybe, like, drivers, there's been such a movement to try to recruit the new hotness, right? To try to pull the next Lewis Hamilton, the next Sebastian Vettel, as early as possible from lower tiers of racing, lock them into your team, and, like, develop them. And then you got your driver situation sorted for basically a generation, or at least a good portion of one. You know, you can have a good foundation to build your team. But I think what's been lost from that a little bit is the track is so full of people who are out to prove themselves. They know the teams are always eyeing, you know, who's done really well in open wheel racing somewhere else, right? Who's the new hotness? And I think that has contributed to just a combination of lack of experience on the track and desperation to make every single encounter on the track be some sort of, like, career highlight reel moment.
Yeah, that's totally rings true to me. I think when you saw what Fernando was saying last week as well, which he's kind of echoed a couple of times at races this week, where he's, you know, giving out about the sort of the reckless drivers of you know, impossible to race with these people or whatever he said last week. And the sort of the victim of this culture of you know, and it's not unique to F1. That whole idea of the prodigy in sports is becoming more and more of a thing in lots of sports. Certainly in football, soccer, when I watched that, and obviously in college football up to NFL, like the draft, all that sort of thing. But the biggest victim of that was of the past couple of years was Danny Kvyat, who we're going to get back again soon enough. And you could you've hit the nail on the head, Rob. The opposite of what Kimi did on that corner is what Danny did on every corner, where he was fighting for his career. Like that last season when he had those four or five horrific races in a row, it was all because he was just like too hot-headed in every single clash, and would eventually, and the eyes were on him as well, but he was letting the eyes be on him because you knew he was going to try he was going to try and win every single corner. And it just, maybe an element of this as well is just how we're able to watch F1, we watch F1 now from like a million different angles, and helicopter shots and slow-mo and all this sort of stuff, whereas back in Jackie Stewart's day, the BBC World Service got a video can arrived 3 days later or something. I don't know. So who knows? But yeah, I think you're totally right. That sort of that culture of who the next hotness is, you can see it when you look at the grid and look how many of these elder statesmen we have, and then look how many drivers have only got like one or two seasons behind them. It's a different time.
I wonder if there's also an element. Sorry, I just wanted to ask this. I wonder if there's also an element of thinking about who people grew up watching. Like, what does F1 mean to different generations, right? Like, Kimi would have been watching, probably the tail end. He would have been watching sort of the tail end of, I suppose, the, Lauda era, and much more, into the Prost, Senna, Mansell era. But, who stood out in that era was, to a degree, Ayrton Senna, who was a great driver, but also one of the most ruthless and willing to take physical risks with the car. And that that's immortalized in a documentary that was really popular 10 years ago, right? One of the great motorsports documentaries is a celebration of, yes, one of the greatest drivers ever, but also a guy who was so in it to win it that he drives a car into his teammate at turn one at Suzuka to make a point. And then the drivers a lot of these people watched were like Michael Schumacher, who was also a guy who was willing to go right up to whatever line, and famously even put a tire over that line to get an advantage. And that was what that's what F1 was, right? It was no longer a generation that got into the car every race thinking about okay, how can I not get myself or someone else killed this week? How do I do this safely and smartly? They watched racing that was much more about, whatever it takes to win.
Right. And I feel you can see that split kind of in the Ferrari, garage as well, where you have Vettel, who is very much I feel caught in the Schumacher cloth of the high highs and then the low lows when it comes to working, with teammates or maybe errors in their career. And then I kind of feel Kimi is more in the sort of Mika Hakkinen, fold of not just another Finn, but a bit more less kind of crazy, a bit not like in the sort of Alain Prost mold, but more doing his bit and ultimately winning championships that way too, just like Hakkinen did as well. I think there's probably maybe 10 or 12 years between the two of them. So yeah, it's you're right. It's interesting to look at who the next people are going to be, right? Because we're looking at Hamilton now. Sure, he's going to be in the sport, but for a couple more years or for good more years, he's young. But I feel I remember doing the interview when they did interview Jenson Button after he'd retired. So these drivers, if they're starting this early, they're going to surely leave early too, earlier than before, right? You're not going to have people like Schumacher going so late in their career, or Alonso, or Kimi, like, if these drivers are, if Max Verstappen's starting at 19, is he going to be driving for 20 years in F1 before he retires? Like, it's, I wonder what it's going to, the sport's going to look like in 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, we might see more people forced out in that case with more young guns coming up. But like that, all that said, I think is one of the reasons why I'm so interested in seeing what Leclerc does, because, you know, I'm not an expert on the guy. I watched him a little bit in Formula 2, and I like the way that he is looking in this first season. But his interview, I think, went up recently on the Formula 1 podcast, Beyond the Grid, and he talks about wanting to do it right. Like he moved. He was never in any one series for longer than a year. Right. The interviewer asked him about that, and he said, "Yeah, but we never wanted to move on unless we thought we were ready to do so. Because, you know, when you start skipping stuff or making leaps that are too big, you don't have the foundation." And so I think he's coming from a really smart place on that. Mm-hmm. But it has been a very steady and steep rise for him. So I'm really curious to see if he can, you know, hang with Ferrari. So really looking forward to 2019 on that respect. In 2018, we are back on lap 17. The Ferraris pitting, Vettel rejoining behind Ricciardo, who is behind Hamilton, who is behind Verstappen. Verstappen's engineer saying, "This is not going to be straightforward to the end of this race, Max. Either one or two stops." I also want to point out that I can never tell the Red Bull engineers apart. They both sound exactly the same, which is to say they both sound like Christian Horner.
Right. British.
Yes, very British. There is also a lot of graining going on with the Ferrari and Mercedes tires at this point. Just like last time, a lot of question marks abound. This long into the race, I think it's how long of a... Yeah, 71-lap race, and we're on lap 28 now. With Sainz going out with a power unit failure, bringing out the virtual safety car. So bummer for him. I don't think anybody pitted at that stage, probably because it was too early. We still have 43 laps to go at that point. But after the restart, I think it was around lap 31 that Perez and Leclerc had a pretty great battle for eighth place. Mm. A lot of switchbacks and trading places that I think a lot took part in the stadium section. So that was cool for the Mexican fans to see their guy getting by people. And it actually ends up with Perez on top. Ricardo, who is in third place, encounters this battle. And as a result, Vettel on his newer tires is able to get past him for third place, which does not make Ricardo happy. He says, "What a joke, these guys," referring to the backmarkers, messing up his flow. Vettel, though, has some real pace, and by lap 39 has caught Hamilton, who's in second, and makes a pretty clean pass, which I guess kind of makes sense, because Hamilton, at this point, really just wants to bring it home in one piece. on the same lap, Ocon and Hartley come together. Hartley's baseboard kind of goes flapping around for a little bit. Not a great race for Ocon, although Hartley was also given a 5-second time penalty and 2 penalty points on his license. He now has a total of 6. By the way, the whole penalty point thing, if you accrue 12 penalty points within a 12-month period, you earn a 1-race ban. So that's how that works. Around the same time, Perez goes out from 8th place with a brake issue, which, again, I think at one point, Brundle or Crofty mentioned that,
David Croft.
There are 3 yeah. Spanish speakers in this race, and all of them are out. So that's a bummer. As mentioned earlier, Mercedes having trouble with its tires on lap 47. Ricardo has caught up to Hamilton, who's in third. Hamilton tries to defend, but locks up and goes off track, I think at turn 1, which lets Ricardo sail through into third place. By the way, I watched this race in... Go ahead.
I was about to say Bottas took that as inspiration for his next lap around turn.
Yeah, it was exactly the same. I think it was the onboard video, maybe, on YouTube that showed both of them side by side. And it's like, it's practically frame perfect the way that both Mercedeses go off at the same point. But when this happened to Hamilton, he like went off and over the grass to rejoin the race. And I actually watched this race in a London pub.
Oh, awesome.
And at that point, everyone like, ah! They like held their breath and went, woo! Because if he goes out, I mean, championship's still on. So, although I guess Vettel would have to win at that point. But that was actually really cool. Although when I walked into that pub, there were a bunch of screens. Most of them were showing American football.
Oh, of course, because the NFL game was on in Wembley.
Yeah, although that game had been over.
Just a regular game.
Yeah, they were showing like afternoon games at night.
Weird.
But I had to go up to the bartender and ask, "You guys have Formula One here?" Oh yeah, downstairs where there were like six people watching it.
Brilliant.
But yeah, needless to say, Mercedes pitted both cars soon thereafter. And with those pits, Verstappen took over the lead, followed by Ricciardo, then Vettel, then Raikkonen, then Hamilton and Bottas. And again, Vettel needs to win. He is currently two places from that. And he needs Hamilton to come in eighth or lower for the championship to continue. Mm. And he does get a boost a few laps later on lap 61, which it would be funny if it wasn't so sad. Ricardo's engine explodes yet again.
Crazy. Seven retirements, more than anyone else on the circuit.
It was seven
this
before.
Year.
This makes it eight.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my God.
Yeah, more than any other driver. Apparently it was the hydraulics / clutch, which is the same as Verstappen had in practice. And
well,
after the race,
put diesel
even...
into it.
After the race,
paperwork.
He said, "I don't see the point of doing the next two races. The car is cursed. Even today, the starts have been good all weekend. The practice starts and for the race start, it's all over the place. Things are happening on Sunday, which I've got no more explanation for. The car... Let Gasly drive it. I'm done with it."
Oh, did he really say that?
Yes.
Oh my God. You know, holy shit. Well, I was about to say, like, you know, you're playing the F1 game and I have that media thing in the new F1 game where you like talk to the media and you can mass effect your way through and be like, you know, Paragon. Oh, hey, shout out to everyone back at the factory. And then there's like the bad thing you can say. I don't even think the worst thing you can say in that is as bad as the car is cursed. Like that seems like maybe the worst possible thing you can say about a car.
You
except
can't
maybe
kick people out
what's
windows
the point?
In that game?
What'd you say?
Yeah, you can't kick people out windows. It's not that much like Mass Effect.
No, sadly. It's that's. Oh my God, I can't believe he said that. That's. I mean, fair. You know, why not? I guess, but that seems like you don't want to end your career with a team that long being that way. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's an element of, you know, you don't want to burn bridges. But at the same time, the performance has been so bad and so specific to his car. Like, after a point, because you can't, I do not believe you can, well, no, I'm sorry, I was going to say I don't believe you can race half-heartedly, but then I thought about Alonso for the past, like, five races, and I was like, no, you can definitely get into an F1 car and not give a shit. And even that's not fair, like, he gets frustrated on the track, he's just so at peace with how badly things are going, his interviews are pretty neutral, and he's just like, yeah, for sure, you know, I'm leaving, so it's all good.
Right.
But I think, like, Ricciardo knows he's a good driver and thinks he can do great things. And he keeps getting himself, like, look how happy he was when he got the pole. Like, it was just, that smile could have, that could have powered a city. That could have solved energy problems for Mexico City. And the next day... yes, he has a bad start, but he doesn't even get to finish the race. He doesn't even get to finish the race because yet again, for some reason, his car is the one that doesn't work. So I get sort of hitting the point where, you know, you try to be nice, you try to be patient. At a certain point, you can't conceal that anymore. And there's some value in just saying, like, you know, to your team that's supposed to support you, you guys are screwing me over, like, routinely.
Yeah, and he doesn't really come down that hard on the team specifically. I think he may even be echoing like the team's frustration too. Like he just says it's cursed, and you know, he's frustrated. I think he also says something like,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's pointless, or it feels hopeless at this point. So I would feel that way if I was, you know, his team too. So I don't know. I can't help but feel.
He can't say the engine's cursed.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. In the end, though, Ricciardo's departure is not enough for Vettel. Verstappen comes home the winner, and in fact was setting purple sectors right up to the end, and his team had to tell him to slow down so his engine didn't explode. Vettel in second, Raikkonen in third, but it is all about Lewis Hamilton. really weird radio message from Will Smith.
Yeah, what Will the Smith. Fuck?
Saying, that's how you do it, baby, just like I taught you.
Didn't just know like Will he taught
Smith
him.
Was his driver coach.
Yeah, he's his fucking Mr. Miyagi for F1 this whole time. He's been teaching him the art of racecraft through his movies and TV shows. And also, perhaps, the 2000 hit Big Willy style. Or Willennium, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
He had an album called Willennium. Are we okay with that now? Willennium. The Willennium okay bug hit the charts. Fuck.
I thought it was a great moment with Hamilton and Vettel in the stadium. Mm-hmm. Vettel came up and like shook his hand and
nice.
Stuff and
yeah.
gave him some kind words, hand or arm over the shoulder, a lot of smiles.
It was nice that Lewis didn't run away like a broken AI in a video game like he did last year. Do you remember? He just like ran fucking down, God knows where, like he just ran into like the arena or something. It was very, very strange.
Or he ran the wrong way and had to like complete the lap of the track, and like fans were jumping over and congratulating him.
Yeah, which I guess he kind of did this time as well, where he ran to the garage before he got weighed and they had to like drag him back. Like he could have been disqualified. They had to put some spanners in his pockets, you know, weighing down a bit.
Exactly. There's a cool video on F1's YouTube channel where it's just a GoPro mounted to a guy's chest who's on the Mercedes team. Oh. And he's the guy that like has to put the steering wheel back on the car and like collect Hamilton's helmet and stuff. And so you get this cool like uncut behind the scenes moment to moment of what it was like for the team to go like out to where Lewis was to shake hands with him and then like come back to the garage. It's cool. I'll link that in the show notes as well.
Nice.
But yeah, you get a good moment with him and Vettel. Vettel also even went to the Mercedes garage and congratulated everyone. So that was a cool moment. Hamilton's omnipresent.
He was like, thanks lads. Trainer. I get to take the next, he's like, thanks lads. I get to take the next two races off.
Yeah, exactly. He like was being interviewed by Coulthard and then like waved his trainer over and they hugged and, you know, it was good. I liked it.
Hmm.
And I liked this season. It's not over yet, but it is for old Louis, coming in fourth in this race behind Verstappen, Vettel, and Raikkonen. Valtteri Bottas coming in fifth. Nico Hülkenberg behind them, followed by Leclerc, Van Dorn, Ericsson, and Gasly coming in 10th, followed by Ocon, Stroll, Sorotkin, Hartley, Magnussen, and Grosjean finishing very far behind the Haas boys. This is not a Haas track, apparently. Mm. Ricardo, Perez, Sainz, and Alonso not classified in this race. Also, Stroll hit a mechanic. They were fined by FIA for €25,000. And that was the Mexican Grand Prix.
Bwah.
And that was the championship. I got a few news stories here.
The end of the podcast over. We're done. Bye. See you next year.
I'm glad that it was extended by the USGP and went on to Mexico. I think, you know, Mexico was a fine race as well. But to just have that little dusting on top was cool.
Yeah, it's a long ass season, so we almost got to the end. You know, we 2 races left out of the, what was it, 21 this year? Like, not bad. That's
not bad.
they've ended sooner than that. So thanks to Sebastian for making a race out of it, giving it the old college try. You know what I mean? I don't think any of us, once that second half of the season started kicking in, I don't think any of us really thought it was going to happen. But it was nice to believe. And now all eyes on the rest of the it'll be fun to watch everyone else sort of shake out, because there's a couple of decent battles going on there in the driver tables, at least.
Speaking of driver tables, Force India has confirmed that Sergio Perez will drive for them again in 2019. They have not confirmed their number two, although it is probably Stroll, because his dad bought the team.
because nepotism? Okay.
We've got mechanics for days, son. Come on over.
Williams has not confirmed their number two, nor has Toro Rosso. And Marcus Ericsson is going to IndyCar.
Oh.
So that's what's up with drivers. Speaking of other series, Formula 3, I didn't know this was happening, but they have revealed their 2019 teams, and also the fact that Formula 3 is kind of revamping. They're merging the FIA Formula 3 European Championship and the GP3 series into a more codified, sane Formula 3. Which is more of a direct path to Formula 2, which is a direct path to Formula 1. Before this, it was kind of like they had these... I think they will still have the regional Formula 3s, but it was weird because there was a European regional Formula 3, but it was also like the best one that everyone wanted to go to, and I think even some of the rules were different. It was strange.
Right.
Don't quote me on any of that. I haven't looked. I stayed away from it because it was so confusing. But now this makes a lot more sense. It's just called Formula 3. There is no more European Championship or GP3. It's just Formula 3. And a lot of the... Seven of the teams are also teams in Formula 2. Mm. A more direct path to Formula 1. Speaking of people on their way to Formula One, Tatiana Calderon, who is the test driver for Sauber, got her first F1 run this week. She drove a 100-kilometer filming day on Tuesday and actually said that the car feels more comfortable than the car she drove in GP3 or F2 because of the power steering.
Amazing. Despite the fact that it's... Yeah. Go on, sorry.
I was just going to move on, but yeah.
No, go for it, yeah.
And the last bit of news here, F1 launched a free mobile racing game for iOS. I'm not sure if it's on Android. It's fine. You know what it is. It's, you know, tilt to steer. Internet is required, which is really strange. But they they renamed their card game to F1 Pack Rivals, which I thought was pretty
Pack, good. Cool. Not bad. Get your Marcus Ericsson card while you can. Do we have anything to say about him? I feel
Ericsson?
Before. I mean, he's had like, this is what, fifth season in F1. You know, long suffering sort of like minnow of the pack, Caterham, Sauber. Is there anything to say? I feel bad for him. I feel like Leclerc obviously got a lot more points this year than him on that team, and. And he sort of never really set the world on fire. It was always like, will he get in the top 10? Do you have anything nice to say about Eric? Bye-bye. Thanks for the memories.
So you were trying to be nice, Danny, but you set this poor guy up for an ethering here. Just because... does anybody have anything to say about ether? Does anyone remember anything about Ericsson? Anyone? And I mean, like, this is weird. I remember he showed some nice racecraft at times. He's shown some this season. Ericsson, you know, to our point, maybe we're answering our own question. Ericsson doesn't have a lot of like catastrophic moments that I can remember. Like Ericsson didn't earn a bad reputation, but neither did he particularly stand out. You know, I guess he is sort of the example of. You do need to do something to distinguish yourself and establish a rep. And I just am not sure. He, you know, for a lot of years, he didn't have a car that would really let you make too much of an impression. And I think that probably served him pretty poorly as well. And then by the time that card did start to come around, he was overshadowed by a teammate who is marked for far greater things. And now that team is going to be moving on to who is the next talent we're going to cultivate. And it sure isn't Erickson. So he's one of those journeyman drivers who didn't make the leap to the next level. And, you know, I think it'd be awesome. It's funny when you watch other forms of motorsport, how often you'll recognize old F1 drivers' names, particularly like in, not just in IndyCar, but in like touring car racing and endurance racing. You know, hopefully he does sort of find a place where his sort of stability and reliability is a little more valued than it is in F1. But as an F1 driver, I think, you know, he was always going to be one of those drivers who was present among great drivers, but never one of them.
Yeah. Making up the numbers a little bit. Well, yeah. I'm glad I brought that up. Sorry, Marcus.
He is 17th in the driver championship.
There you go.
Is that good? Was that supposed to help, Drew?
I think he's two underneath his teammate there. I think he's got like
behind
20 points less. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes. He had that bad crash in Italy. That's the only thing I can think about why he did this here is he had that really bad crash in Italy.
That's true.
Where he turned in. Where the car just randomly turned in before the first turn. There you go. That's his highlight
there
reel.
There you go. I don't know. He was a pay driver for a long time, right? He comes with money, and so that's wasn't that the thing about why he was always omnipresent at these teams?
Yeah,
like I thought it was because he looked a bit like Nico Rosberg, so people just thought it was Nico for like three years.
Didn't you quit?
Yeah,
nope, I'm still here, and I pay.
I'm with you, Rob. It was finally nice to see him like actually able to execute some racecraft in a more competitive car. But yeah, apparently not enough to save his seat. Enough to save his seat, though. Hamilton winning the drivers' championship with 358 points. Vettel's got 294, so it's pretty safe to say he's in second. Raikkonen has 236. Close behind him is Bottas with 227. Verstappen's got 216, and then a little further down is Ricciardo with 146. Hülkenberg's got 69. Perez has 57.
Nice.
Magnussen with 53. Alonso in 10th with 50. That's impressive. Ocon's got 49. By the way, Perez and Ocon had their points reset halfway through the season. Sainz with 45, Grosjean's got 31, Gasly with 29, Leclerc with 27. That's a tight grouping there. Van Dorn's got 12, Ericsson with 9, Stroll with 6, Hartley with 4, and Sorotkin with 1. Hartley's really got to have... He's got to win the next couple of races, I think, to keep his seat. Mercedes has 585 points, Ferrari with 530, so the Constructors' Championship is still up in the air. I saw a grid on Reddit or something with how Mercedes could win, and it's about, it was a lot of squares, but about a third of the squares were Ferrari, and a third of the, or two-thirds of the squares were Mercedes, so that's about the chances they have. Red Bull with 362, Renault with 114, Haas has 84 points, McLaren's got 62, Force India with 47, Sauber's got 36, Scuderia Toro Rosso has 33, and Williams with 7. Fantasy standings, you can join us at the Shift F1 official Fantasy Formula 1 League with the invite code 0B62FE. That'll be in the show notes.
Tattooed on
only two
arm.
Races left. Speedy McCready out in front with 2,500 points, followed behind him is Bobby Gondo Racing, Made in Haas, Orange B King F1, Renault. You didn't. Oh my god. Blue Doe's Elite, Scuderia Matteo, David Coulthard's Chin, Phil F1, and Trendsetters. I am all the way down in 136th.
Nice work.
Thank you. I don't know what is happening out in the backyard of this Airbnb.
That's that happens. That's Cthulhu emerges from the Irish Sea and moans at us, usually around this time on a weekday. So don't worry about it.
Okay, great. You can also hit us up on Twitter, follow at Shift F1 Podcast for any show updates and any fun F1 stuff we run across. I am at Drew Scanlon on Twitter. Danny?
I am at Danny O'Dwyer on everything.
Rob Zachney?
At Rob Zachney.
Shout outs again to everyone who said Danny O'Dwyer better watch out. He's going to get some competition for the ending of upcoming Shift F1 Podcast with the Zoom noises. That is... Ducenage, a.k.a. Spooks McKenzie. Nice Halloween-themed name. Thanks to everybody who wrote in and said hey around the internet. But now it is time to see what other racing is happening around this weekend around the world.
Day. Oh my gosh. It's time to race around the world. Yeah.
We're kicking off Friday with Camping World Truck at the Texas Motor Speedway in Fort Worth, TX for the Longhorn 350.
Wow.
Supercars are racing for the ITM Auckland Super Sprint race in, and I actually got an email from Lachy
Auckland
saying... Hey, Drew, if you're planning on mentioning the ITM Auckland Super Sprint in New Zealand as part of your roundup this week, I thought I'd just warn you about the pronunciation of the place they're racing at, because it can be a bit of a toughie. From my untrained ear, you seem to do pretty well with pronunciation of other languages generally, so apologies if this message is unnecessary. It is not. Anyway, the town is Pukekohe. Pukekohe. It's not puke as in vomit. So keep up the great work. Looking forward to the next episode. Thank you, Lachy. Pukekohe.
What would you have said? Puka coke?
Puka, yeah. Puke coke. Probably.
Puke coke. It's like Saturday morning after you've had a little bit too much of the white stuff.
MotoGP is at Sepang International Circuit in Malaysia for the Shell Malaysia Motorcycle Grand Prix. Yes, my favorite onomatopoeia racetrack.
And NASCAR is also in Tejas at the Motor Speedway, the eponymous Motor Speedway, the Texas Motor Speedway, for the AAA Texas 500.
I really thought you were about to declare it like the eponymous 500, and I was going to be like, damn, NASCAR, like that is a way to not get a sponsor.
It's a placeholder 500. Not quite as good as the Longhorn 350, but we'll take it. And that is it. We do not have a Formula One race this weekend because we will be back next week with our pre-Brazil episode.
Brazil.
You can also send us some emails at f1.cool/emails. We'll be reading more of those in the next episode. So, as always, you can find our show notes on f1.cool. And until next time, I am Drew Scanlon. That is Danny O'Dwyer. That is Rob Zachney. If you want to support Danny and I, we are both on Patreon. Me at patreon.com/clothmap. Danny at patreon.com/noclip. You can find Rob at his day job at waypoint.vice.com. Anything else, Rob?
No, I am just I'm just beginning my end of season ritual, which is Robert Kubica watch.
Still in the running.
That's what I'm
still
here
on
for.
The short list.
Can we do a segment, because we've all these baked in segments that I have just by virtue of being the only other person who did this podcast for a while with the Nyum and all that racing around the world and shit. Can we do like a Kubica watch with Rob every week? I'd be into that.
I think yes.
There's a
I
chance that becomes a really frustrating and sad segment though. Like that needs to end with him getting like a racing seat.
Right, and you, but the weeks he's not doing anything, he just makes some shit up, though. I mean, no one's gonna know.
That's true. Robert Kubica is saving a basket of kittens.
It'd be perfect. Shout out to Robin and everyone at Waypoint for the awesome charity stuff you did last week, I think it was. Was it? That was,
oh, yeah. Thank you so much. That was a blast.
Yeah. And actually, yeah, we'll be doing the sorry, that was not meant as a segue into the Giant Bomb one.
No, but it's a perfect one. We will also be streaming live for charity this weekend over on giantbomb.com. I know there will be embeds in there. Also, Danny, what's your Twitch URL?
Oh, it'll be twitch.tv/DannyDwyer, I think. I think you're on Monday, right? And then I'm on Tuesday?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, you're doing 12 and I'm doing 12, I think.
Yeah, I will youtube.com/clothmap. But again, I think all of us will be embedded in the Giant Bomb chat. If you're unfamiliar with Extra Life, it is we play video games for extended periods of time to raise money for children's hospitals. So if you want to see us live and in person over the internet, playing video games, you can do that on Monday and Tuesday. So join us for that and join us next week. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next time.
Meow.